This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/JoelDuggan to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 140 for Wednesday, March 25th, 2015. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. And joining me tonight is Sam Bonin. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Glad to have you. First time here.
I'm usually in the chat room, though.
Yes. Well, and this is what led you to be on the show, is because you're here so much and you're always contributing. So I thought, hey, what a great opportunity to have you on the show. I don't know if I bullied you into it, but I certainly asked more than once.
I remember you said that somebody didn't like your accent, and I said something to them in response of, well, you can't have me on the show because my accent is way worse. And then it was a challenge accepted kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. So you got to be careful what you say in the chat room. Let that be a warning to all you folks.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So what, where do you hail from? I mean, you and I are both in Halifax, which is cool. But what, like, are you from the city or are you from outside the city?
No, I'm from outside the city. I'm from actually the most northern point in the province. It's this little tiny village of like 300 people called Meat Cove.
Meat Cove, like M-E-A-T?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a fishing tourism kind of town.
I would imagine any place called Meat Cove would have to be.
Yeah, moose hunting's a thing.
I would just say, like, how is that where it got its name? Is moose hunting or from hunting? Because I mean, I'm thinking Meat Cove. It's like it's not Fish Cove. It's
it's a heavily populated area for moose, so that's how it got its name.
Nice. That's a unique place to be from.
It is.
Yeah, and for those of you wondering, that would be in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia. Yeah. Very, very cool. And that's not all that is, I guess, the cool factors about Sam. You actually, we met years ago through HalCon, the local Comic-Con here in Halifax. I guess I shouldn't call it a Comic-Con. It's a sci-fi and fantasy convention. And you've been helpful in the chat room on many occasions when I've been getting things wrong about HalCon, and you've been able to correct me. But you are the comic guest liaison? Yes.
What's the title? I think we're just shortening them now to just guest coordinator, because everybody's taking on so many things, like voice actors, cosplay, comic book artists, actors, the whole shebang.
Right. So you are the comic guest coordinator.
Yeah.
Right, which is how we met, because of course, a few years ago, I was a comic guest.
Yes. That was actually my first year being on the committee.
Well, you wouldn't have known, because you and I got along just great, and I felt that once HalCon was rolling, it went very smoothly for me the last few years that I've been there. Once kind of the doors are open and the whole event is happening, I've always felt that you guys kind of roll with the punches pretty well, which is important because you guys are a growing con, right?
Yeah. We started out the Lord Nelson 6 years ago, just in the ballroom there. And now we take up the three floors of the convention center, and we just rented out the Scotiabank Center.
Nice.
So we're going to be well over 6,000 people this year.
That's awesome. So where's the Scotiabank Center?
It's the Metro Center.
Oh, the Metro. I hate it when they change the names of things. It's been the Metro Center since I was three.
Yeah.
Why? Whatever. Okay. So the Scotiabank Center is now part of it. So that's a big space.
Yeah. We're going to put, I think it's going to be Actually, I probably shouldn't say.
Okay, no, that's fine. And that, and I want to be careful because I know that there are obviously some very cool things that are coming up for HowlCon that you can't talk about. So I don't want to put you in any kind of like precarious position. But is there anything cool that's happening that you know that you're clear to mention on the show?
Well, we just did our first guest announcement last week, which kind of leads into the thing I want to plug for us. We'll be hosting again John Rhys-Davies.
Oh, nice.
But that's only for Saturday. He's only coming for the one day.
The one day.
The Sci-Fi Symphony, which is going to be our event with Symphony Nova Scotia, it's a symphony that's going to be just of like geeky movie scores, like Star Trek, Star Wars.
Wow.
And that's going to happen October 31st and November 1st, and John Rhys is going to host those.
That's amazing. So yeah. He's coming back for the November 1st?
Yeah, he's going to be at the show on the Saturday to do autographs.
Right.
And then the symphony is at 7:30 that night, and then there's a matinee show of 2 p.m. on the 1st. It's only about $30 plus tax.
Wow.
For that kind of show.
That's crazy, because I was just talking with a friend, and he had mentioned that the video game music that the Symphony Nova Scotia had put on. I can't remember what the event was called. Do you remember?
Video Games Live.
Video Games Live, yeah. Yeah. The tickets for that were like $60, and which is fine. I would totally pay it.
Yeah.
So 30 for a sci-fi concert is a steal.
30 plus, and they said some of their ticket packages you can get as low as 21.
Wow. That's amazing. I'm going to be looking into that immediately after the show. very, very cool. So are you, obviously we're both pretty geeky people, but are you a classical music fan? Like, is this part of your, you know, identification as a nerd?
Not really. I mean, for answering emails and stuff, slapping on like a video game score, really super helpful. I think I picked that up from being around artists. For some reason, you guys like to draw art and listen to classical music.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a huge classical music fan, and I can tell you probably why. And it's less things like Mozart, Beethoven. It's more things like John Williams and I'm blanking. I can't pronounce his name. He's the guy that does the score for Game of Thrones. Djawari, I think it's yes. Incredible. It's very difficult to even spell, so I won't try to butcher it any further. But the guy that does the Game of Thrones stuff, and he's done several other things, including
Pacific Rim.
That's where I was going. Yeah. So that kind of stuff is all written to accompany films, which are very visual. So the music is kind of drawing on a specific emotion, but also a visual kind of experience. It's accentuating some very cool things that are happening on screen, often action stuff. So like whenever I listen to the John Williams score for Superman, you kind of think of two things: flying and lifting heavy shit.
Yes.
You know, like,
yeah, exactly.
Superman's underneath a plane that's going down and he's saving it from crashing into the ocean, or he's just kind of gliding, you know, elegantly through the air. At some of the softer pieces are very kind of, they invoke flight, that sort of thing. Yeah. And I like to draw to that kind of stuff because it kind of pushes that visual area of my mind. And it's not always the same thing. Like, I don't necessarily think of the movie when I listen to the music, because there's the main themes, and sure, I mean, like Star Wars, the main theme, the Imperial March, Indiana Jones, a lot of the famous stuff, you zone in and you remember the credits or you remember certain moments. But then there's all these other tracks that happen throughout the movie when it's like, you know, Jeep Chase number 5. And you don't really think about that so much as when you're watching it. The music plays a big role, but it's not iconic. So when you're listening and drawing later on, you kind of put your own visuals to the staccato strings and the French horns and all the stuff that's going on. So going to a live concert where you're not sure, I mean, they're probably going to play a lot of fan favorites, like the themes that most people are going to recognize. But often there'll be a movie that you haven't seen. Like maybe people haven't seen Pacific Rim. You know, maybe some people haven't seen some Doctor Who stuff that they would reference. And that's always fun to like discover new music and listening to it in a different setting, you know, and being played live is always very, very different. Have you been to the Symphony Nova Scotia recently?
No, I haven't. I know a lot of people who went to video games live and they loved it. They thought it was so great. They had like a Guitar Hero competition at the start, and whoever won that got brought on in the middle of the show, and the actual symphony would play while the guy was playing the game.
Oh my God. That's amazing. Oh man, definitely a geeky evening. One of the guy, my friend that I was talking about, his name's Craig, and he is a music composition student. And he was saying that he really thought the conductor that was, leading video games live was phenomenal. And he's a student for this stuff. So, he would know, you know, it'd be like me finding an artist and just saying, hey, this artist is fantastic. Like, you know, he knows this stuff. It made me kind of sad that I missed the opportunity to go see it.
Yeah, I just couldn't find the time or the cash to go to something like that.
Yeah. Well, we can, move on to some other parts of the show here. One thing that I'm excited about is some listener email. And if you'd like to email the show, it's just thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. This actually came to me from Facebook because Paul Fox, previous guest on the show from Hong Kong, is a friend of mine. So he sent me this article, and it's called Every Woman in Disney Pixar Looks the Same. the past decade looks exactly the same. And I've heard it mentioned before. I've heard it kind of like complained about, but it's usually the noisy complainers, and I don't often give it much credit. Although I have noticed lately, especially since Frozen came out, I wouldn't call it a complaint because I did really like Frozen, but one of the complaints I have about Frozen is I feel like Elsa and Anna really looked too similar. And I get that they're sisters and they're supposed to look alike, but it really kind of felt cookie cutter. And that's the first time I noticed it, because what people were doing, they were comparing, I think, Anna to Rapunzel from Tangled, and saying that like she's essentially the same model, like they really didn't change that much. And while I can say that it's pretty difficult because girls are, especially young women in movies like this that are kind of like teenagers / early 20s, if they want them to look a certain way, their features are often really subtle, and it's hard to make big changes and not have that look harsh.
Okay.
You know, from an artistic perspective. So I can kind of understand how they kind of have to land in the same zone. But I really appreciated what this article went out, because the guy basically goes on and shows a bunch of different male faces over the last decade, and then a bunch of different female faces over the last decade. And I should point out, most of the characters that he's outlined in the male section are leads, not all. But then all of the female characters are lead characters, with the exception of one, maybe two. But I noticed that he was picking some more obscure male characters. And not all of these are the love interest characters, which I find, like, if you went back and you looked at the Disney movies from the classical days and looked at all the Prince Charmings, I bet you they'd look a lot alike too.
Yeah, I think all the Prince Charmings have the same face.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty, and they're not the focus of those movies at all. They're just meant to be the dude that kind of swoops in and saves the day back in the 30s.
They barely had lines.
True. Very, very true. But anyway, this guy goes and traces their faces. Noses and jaw lines were the big thing. And basically, when you look at the lines after he's done, the women really do look the same. They really, it's very just like little nose in the middle of the face, and the face is generally either round with a little bit of a pointed chin or not much more. I don't know whether it's not that I'm not seeing it. I see it. I just don't know if I mind. And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to bring this up on the show with you, Sam, is because, like, I wanted your two cents on it.
It feels a little weird. Like, it's not something I noticed until I saw the article, but then again, I do have kind of a similar face to these women, so it's not something I would notice.
Right.
And to the Elsa Anna point, I have a sister who looks very much like me, so I can't really comment on that.
Right.
I think you've met Paula before, and yeah, we look exactly the same. It's just she's 2 inches shorter. But yeah, the thing that I found strange about it is that they've had all different body types, but to not change the faces seems a little bit weird, because three of these are even just, they're supposed to be representing emotions. It's not even a human.
Yeah, the from the new Pixar movie, what's it called? Do you remember the name of it?
No, I'm totally blanking on it.
Yeah, maybe Phil can help us out in the chat room. I'm blanking on the new Pixar movie that's coming out with the internal emotions. But the you're right. I mean, like the two female emotions, they have that kind of like Disney pretty, kind of Disney princess look. Whereas the male emotion, both of them, are really bizarre. Like the anger is a square. he doesn't even have a nose. Like he doesn't look, there's not even remotely human, right? And then the other guy, he's more like the snowman from Frozen, where he's got like a big funny shaped head with big eyes and a pointy nose, and is not at all realistic. He's very much a cartoon character. Whereas then the two female characters, they really do look like people, just with like glowing skin and blue hair.
Yeah, exactly. Like Sadness is just a square body with a round head.
Yeah.
A sweater and glasses. Like they put glasses on her to make her different.
Yeah.
And I don't know it from like an artist's perspective, but it does feel a little bit lazy.
Oh, it absolutely is. That was a complaint that I had about Big Hero 6, is that they had an opportunity with the secondary characters, as they do in every movie, to really kind of push them and really make them over the top and kind of design their physical character features to suit their role.
Yeah.
You know, so, for example, the girl that has the speed discs for Big Hero 6, she could have been a lot more angular.
Yeah.
You know, she could have been a lot more, I mean, her hair is kind of cool, but like, it's not, there's no distinguishing feature. Like if you just looked at her in a silhouette without all of her gear, you wouldn't know. Right.
Yeah.
Same with the girl with glasses. Like she's tall and lanky and that's a little bit of a help, but without her purse and her little spheres that she has in the movie, again, you wouldn't be able to pick her out from just her silhouette. And I think they could have pushed her a lot more. Like those glasses could have been huge. They could have been cat glasses. Like, I mean, anything to kind of make her really distinct, right? I mean, you think about the older Pixar movies like The Incredibles and like Edna. You can pick her out a mile away. She's got different stature, a different haircut, a different body type altogether, huge head with giant glasses and big eyes. Like, I mean, she's just so different. And all the characters, I would say, in Incredibles are pretty good as far as being different from one to the other. The mom still sort of fits this archetype, and she's in here. She's pictured. Elastigirl's in here as having very similar features to the rest of the Disney leads, but within Incredibles, they're all pretty different.
Yeah, for the rest of them, they're all fairly different, but even with, Phil in the chat room got it was Inside Out.
Oh, right. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah. But yeah, even with, like you were saying, Big Hero 6, the guy who wears the giant monster suit, even his face is distinctively different.
Yes.
Than everybody else's.
Yeah, that's true. The only time I can kind of, and this is where, not so much the Disney marketing, but like from a story perspective and from an appeal perspective as a character designer, I get why Hero, Elsa and Anna, and really any other Disney lead kind of has to be pretty cookie cutter not in a negative way, but because everybody has to identify with them, like the hero of the story or the heroine of the story, they have to be very easily identifiable with the audience. So they kind of have to go with what society in at large thinks is pretty, if it's a Disney princess, or thinks is handsome as a, you know, if it's a male lead, or is appealing as far as like, you know, he's a hero, is a good looking 14-year-old kid, right? And he's got kind of basic features. He's not, I'm disappointed that they didn't go more Asian with him. his older brother was very distinctly Asian, but Hiro seemed to be kind of like, if it wasn't for his hair and the heritage that they mentioned, you wouldn't necessarily look at him and say, oh, wow, you know, he's an Asian kid. And I think they kind of, again, it's hard to, it's a fine line to kind of skirt around. but I understand why, to appeal to everybody, that they do that. The only one that I don't agree with in here is actually Merida from Tangled, Brave.
And yeah, her face is a lot rounder than the rest of them.
She's got very round facial features. She's got a little bit a wider mouth, and her eyes are not as big. She's not as unrealistically kind of doll-faced. She doesn't have anime syndrome. And I remember something else that they don't show you in this clip is that Merida's hair is a huge part of her character design. And they've cut it all off here.
Yeah.
Right?
Just and, showcase.
Yeah. And I think that that's, she's the only one I disagree with. I think that she, especially in that movie, when you see her moving around too, they do a good job of kind of separating her from other Disney princesses, but everything else I'm kind of agreeing with this guy on. it's all very, very similar. I don't know. I'm trying to think about other examples where things would be a little bit different. Well, How to Train Your Dragon 2, I can't remember her name, but the lead love interest for Hiccup, she's not cookie cutter. You know, she's got a more angular set of features, but DreamWorks traditionally goes a little bit of a different route with her stuff too.
Yeah, that's true.
Right on. Well, thanks very much, Paul, for writing in. And if anybody else has some articles or thoughts on recent films, movies, TV shows, anything that you want to write in about, it's thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Well, let's dive into what we've been watching. Sam, what's been on the screen for you this week?
Well, I have been watching, well, I've gone to the theater twice to see this because, and I think I've annoyed everybody about this movie. It's called What We Do in the Shadows. It's a mockumentary about four vampires who share a house.
Okay.
it's headed up by one of the guys from Flight of the Conchords.
Nice.
And it's about these four New Zealand vampires and just the stuff that they go through. Things like, well, you're not doing the dishes, or if you bring somebody home and you're going to bleed them, could you put towels down?
Nice.
And just like the silly things that you wouldn't think of, but the day-to-day life of what being a vampire would actually be like. There was one scene where they were talking about where they get their clothes to go out, and one of them was like, well, we get some of our clothes from our victims. You might be bleeding somebody and think, ooh, those are nice pants.
Jeez.
And it's just, it's one of those. And it just works so well, and it's so funny, and I think everybody should see it.
Wow. And you've seen it twice?
Twice, yeah.
Yeah. So now, the thing about some of these comedy films when it comes to, like, special effects and vampires and stuff like that, like, does it live up to kind of believable special effects, or is it all pretty campy stuff?
It is fairly believable because they are trying to make it like a documentary, so it has a bit of that guerrilla style to it.
Oh, cool.
But they still do the traditional vampire stuff of, like, they shapeshift. But one of them doesn't shapeshift. When he does shapeshift, he doesn't get the faces right. So there's one time where they're just chasing a guy through the house before they eat him. And you just see this cat, and it has a man's face.
Oh my God. Awkward.
It's the funniest.
Yeah.
And yeah.
I really enjoy Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah, he plays one of, the guy from Flight of the Conchords plays one of those traditional, like, Vlad the Impaler style vampires.
Okay.
And he's actually the one who messes up the shapeshifting and has his face on a cat.
Hmm. So how, what other archetypes of the vampires are there? So there's, like, the Vlad the Impaler type, but what are the other guys? Or girls?
Actually, surprisingly, not that many women, which is kind of sad. But there's the 18th century fop. There's the Nosferatu, who lives in the basement. And there's kind of a slightly other medieval style kind of vampire. As you know, he was supposed to be, I think, 17th century.
Okay.
So he's supposed to be the bad boy of the group.
Nice. Oh, man. Well, it sounds like a lot of fun.
I wasn't expecting it to be, like, I thought, I was like, okay, it's going to be one of those indie films where they don't do it very well, but then they just do these just off-the-cuff kind of jokes that they just play off as normal. Like the whole, well, if you could just put some towels down before you bleed somebody.
Just the average conversation, the same that you would ask for somebody to, like, you know, clean up after themselves or vacuum, stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, like they have a chore wheel.
Oh, nice. So are their chores different than, like, are they vampire chores versus regular chores?
No, they're like dishes, vacuuming, who takes out the trash, that kind of stuff.
Right on. So Jemaine Clement stars and directs in it. Very big goal. And wrote it, too. Jeez. Busy man. Busy, busy man. I wouldn't recognize him, though. I'm looking at a picture of him as a vampire. I don't think I'd pick him up with those glasses.
Yeah, he looks totally different. Vladislav the Poker.
Nice. Subtle. Very, very subtle. Oh, man. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I highly recommend it.
So for me, I actually managed to get two movies in. I don't normally have time, but I was up late. I couldn't sleep one night. And the first one I watched with intent, and I've been meaning to catch Ip Man 2, but it's been so long since I've seen Ip Man, I thought, you know, I should really go back and watch the first one. And I can't recall if I've ever talked about Ip Man on the Citadel Cafe before, but I know I haven't talked about Ip Man 2 because I only just saw that this past weekend. So Ip Man, for those of you that don't know, is a Chinese film, so it's dubbed. So you got to read the English subtitles. But the great thing about this is that it's paced in a way that when there's a lot of heavy talking going on, you have the time with the way that the cinematography is put together to read the lines and see the emotions on people's faces. The camera hangs long enough to kind of give you an impression of what's going on, which I really like. I think it might be just because Mandarin, which I think is what they're speaking, they speak faster than the English words. So they'll say something and then there's the emotional reaction. So you can kind of watch what's been said and how the actors are saying stuff, but then the English subtitles are left up on the screen long enough for you to read what was said as person X or Y is like leaving the room or some kind of mundane action has happened, like someone's finishing making tea or something like that, something not important to watch. So I really enjoyed that because I'm a bit of a slow reader when it comes to subtitles, so it was nice to be able to keep up. It's a very, very well done movie. Ip Man is great. There is fantastic kung fu. Donnie Yen is the guy that plays Ip Man. I think that got his last name right. Yeah, and he's a good actor. He's a very calm guy. Ip Man was a Wing Chun kung fu master in the 30s, and he continued on right up through the end of the century. He was the guy that actually trained Bruce Lee. And the way that the story goes in Ip Man, which I had to look up, and I actually lost a good part of my afternoon to this, which was very cool. In 1937, Japan invaded China, and basically there was this war between the Japanese-Chinese war, which I didn't realize, because when you think about the 30s and the 40s, I mean, immediately you just think World War II. So everybody thinks about the European theater and what was going on with, you know, U.S., Canada, and Britain, France, and Germany, and all that kind of stuff. But with the Pacific theater, which came later in World War II, there's this whole Japanese-Chinese war gets overshadowed a lot. And so I had to go on Wikipedia and look it up and see what was going on. And it was this weird kind of like Marco Polo Bridge situation where the Japanese basically claimed that the Chinese had fired on them, even though there was a ceasefire. And that kind of gave them, they felt, the right to invade. And it lasted for a long time. China was under a Japanese regime for a while. And the Japanese would try to kind of prove that Japanese martial arts was better than Chinese martial arts. And Ip Man eventually kind of stood up for, you know, his martial art and his people. And there's a couple of really, really poignant fight scenes and confrontations between a local general and Ip Man. And it is just phenomenal stuff, because it really kind of, you really root for him. You know, you root for the Chinese people. They're the underdogs. And there's a lot of really cool culture in this movie. But I just can't believe, like, there's obviously some wire work, like it's got a little bit of fantasy and legend to it, but most of it is just straight up. These guys are faster than I've ever seen. And you can sort of tell when there's no camera tricks. Like, you can kind of tell when it's just the camera is stationary and they're just punching each other. And it is beautiful to watch. I really, really highly recommend it. You can also check out Ip Man 2. If you're curious about where the story goes from there, I enjoyed where they took Ip Man's story. I wasn't so keen on kind of like the villain and the main plot line. The following the characters' arcs were neat in Ip Man 2, and it's a funnier movie. There's more humor in it, but the villain is a British boxer who's basically a racist asshole. And it's not, it becomes a lot more about just the fight between Ip Man and him, but not so much about like the Chinese martial arts or overall arc about where Ip Man is kind of going and how he's taking martial arts as a form. It's just more about the confrontation and beating this guy, which you want to see, because like I said he's a giant dick, so you kind of want to see him get in there. And I like that it wasn't like a complete blowout in either direction. Like, this guy's a boxer and he's very good, he's the world champion, and the way that they portrayed is that even though it's hard to hit Ip Man, when he gets punched hard. Like, he only has to get hit like twice, maybe three times before he gets knocked down to the mat, because this guy's just a monster. And it was really neat that they weren't trying to show that one martial art or one fighting style was better than another. Ip Man was just kind of trying to prove a point that we should all just respect each other as opposed to punching each other in the ring. But yeah, I would say Ip Man is a much better movie than Ip Man 2. If you decide to watch them both, definitely watch the first one. Before you watch the second. There are more too. I can't remember the name of the origin movie. There's one that follows Ip Man before he fights the Japanese, when he's developing his style of Wing Chun. And then there's another one called Ip Man, The Final Fight. And Donnie Yen is not in that one. Ip Man is a older man. Yeah. And they've got somebody else. I don't remember the guy's name. But they're all on Netflix here in Canada. So, I mean, it's not like, if you don't like it, you can just turn it off. It's not like you've lost any money from renting like a $7 movie or something on iTunes. But I really like them. Have you seen either one of them?
I saw the first Ip Man, and I really loved the fight scene that was inside of his house. When every time they kept breaking something, the other guy would just look and be like, okay.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Or when the kid like came around the door with his big wheel and they all stopped fighting because they didn't want to fight in front of a child.
Yeah.
Lunch is ready.
Yeah. Yeah. The music changes and they kind of pause for a minute. And it's like, they're doing this in very important duel, but it's in the guy's house. And right before they fight, cause the guy that he's fighting is a big dick. He's the bully in the movie. And right up until he insulted his wife, Ip Man was like, no, I don't want to fight you. I really don't want to do this. I'd rather spend time with my family. I'm having some home issues. Like, my wife is complaining I'm not spending enough time with my son. I shouldn't fight because it's my day with my son. And eventually the wife just kind of, she gets pissed off. This guy interrupts their dinner or whatever and pisses her off. And she just looks at him like, don't break anything. Basically like, kick his ass, but don't break my stuff. You know? So every time this guy knocks over a vase, Ip Man is like, do you have any idea how much trouble I'm in every time you break one of these things? And eventually he beats him up with a feather duster, which is hilarious.
Yeah. I remember it being one of those great scenes that it was violent, but it still had that aspect of it could be comedic.
Yeah.
And still be dramatic.
Yeah. And because it's not a real, it's not a real fight. They call it a duel. So in the other fights later on in the movie, Ip Man is really hurting people. He's punching people. He's breaking legs. He's, you know, knocking people out. In the final fight, he's really hammering, you know, both of them are really trying to hurt one another, the general and Ip Man. But in this one, it's just more of a contest where, like, they have control so that if they have their opponent in a situation where they've are able to get a strike, like a fatal blow or something like that, then they would punch or chop, but they would stop before they actually hit the guy. And the guy, there'd be enough of a pause there for the guy to realize, crap, you got me, you know? And so that's what he was doing, essentially, would be take this feather duster, and he'd be basically like, if this was a sword, you'd be dead here, and you'd be dead here, and here, I killed you again. But really what he's doing is just slapping him with this feather duster, which is making this funny little flip noise, and yeah, it's very fun. Right on. I would highly recommend Ip Man for sure. I'm hopefully going to watch the other ones. I don't have time right now, but I'm hoping they're in my next Netflix queue, so they're going to be on the list for sure.
Okay.
Anything happening as far as like what you've been reading or listening to?
Nothing too much. I actually need to go pick up my comic book poll at some point because Jen and the Holograms number one came out today.
So. Nice. I should go get that for my sister. Anything on like podcasts or music that you want to recommend?
The only thing that I have been listening to recently it's mostly on YouTube, but you can still get the audio of it, is Explain Things to Me. It's Anna Akana and Brad Gage. They bring in an expert just to talk about their job or just their profession. Last episode had a puppeteer on it, but they had a chef, a model, a mortician, and the one that I have in the show notes was the two guys from Two Bit Circus. There are a couple of engineers who just make up like circus tricks.
Wow.
Like a real. They had one called the Dunk Tank Flambé, where instead of getting dunked into water, you got shot with fire.
Oh, jeez. I'll take being in a dunk in the tank, thanks.
Yeah. But it looks cool.
Yeah, how do you make things cooler? Light them on fire. Okay. Sounds wonderful. All the performers are like, son of, why is this a trend?
But yeah, there's been the things that they talk about that they have a studio where engineers can just go and just build things. To be part of a show, like, they sometimes will set up, like, a bunch of lasers in a room for a party so that you can go underneath them Mission Impossible style.
Very cool.
Part of their performance, yeah. Everything that they've talked about has been really interesting, from the mortician and the model and the puppeteers and the chef.
Very, very cool. We'll have to leave those links in the show notes and the chat room, as a matter of fact. It's one of the great things about being in the chat room is I try to throw the links out there in the links or in the chat room or in both. I don't know what I'm saying. Ignore me. Just be in the chat room. It's live. It's fun. And you get to hang out with people like Phil and Hammond and Sam because she's often in the chat room too. Well, we can move on to the last part of the show, which is the Internet Minute, brought to you, of course, by tweakedaudio.com. You can visit that website for high-performance noise-reducing earbuds and use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's tweakedaudio.com, and the code, once again, is TCC. Well, I've got a pretty simple pick this week. It dawned on me this afternoon. I didn't actually have anything. And one of the things I was doing after I finished up at the Dalhousie Student Union Market, which is my last week there this week. I went to Starbucks for a coffee afterwards, and I usually use that time to catch up on some of the things that I want to read. And I get this news article from Elegant Themes. Elegant Themes is the company behind Divi, which is the WordPress theme that you see on the CitadelCafe.com. My friend Ryan Murphy, who's been on the show before, helped me put together the website. Him and I design websites together all the time. So if you're looking for one, you know, drop me a line or Ryan a line, and we can hopefully help you out. You can visit ryanmurphy.ca actually and see all of Ryan's web design work. But for me, the Elegant Themes newsletter is my pick for this week. And I don't necessarily read everything they send. They send out a daily newsletter Monday to Friday, usually about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Atlantic time. So probably mid-afternoon, Eastern. And what I like about it is they'll just link to very practical web design or web user kind of interface tools, tips, and breakdowns of different things. For example, today they compared two different newsletter applications, MailChimp and the other big one, which I don't remember, because MailChimp is the one that I decided would be best for me. And it was a very kind of simple breakdown. You don't have to be a coder. You don't have to be kind of a back-end person. It helps if you were an entrepreneur. They talk, there's a little bit of marketing speak in there, but they basically break down and compare the two different mail services and figure out which one would be the best for you, pros, cons, all that kind of stuff. And ultimately, at the end of the article, I felt pretty confident in saying, like, yeah, I would use MailChimp if I decided to do a monthly newsletter. And they've gone over all kinds of different things, themes for WordPress, social media stuff, plugins, design, even if it's something as simple as like why cards are the new thing on the internet. And so if you're not familiar with what cards are, it's how Pinterest is laid out. It's how Google Plus is laid out. So it's rather than a single stream in your newsfeed like Facebook, it's kind of scattered a little bit and a little offset. It's a little bit more attractive. It's like a cascading kind of look. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, if you're a web design developer, or if you just like to kind of noodle around with your own website, check out elegantthemes.com. They've got lots of WordPress themes for sale. Their blog is where all these articles are posted. And of course, you can sign up for their newsletter and receive a note whenever one of these things is published. Again, I don't read all of them, but I tend to, about, I wouldn't say 60 or 70% of them are of interest to me. So Sam, what's your pick this week?
My pick is actually a TED Talk called Girls Can Be Their Own Superheroes.
Nice.
From this dad of two little girls who are really into superheroes. I think most people would actually know one of them. She dresses up as Captain Marvel. She's only, I think, maybe 8. And they do these really elaborate costumes for their little girls. But what he's been finding is that to find girl superheroes in, say, like, the toy aisle or even clothes or anything like that, that it's been near impossible.
Mm.
The way that the toy aisle is laid out is that superheroes are always for boys, and girls have to be princesses, and it's just that he would rather his girls be superheroes. He even puts in a video that he filmed just for his Twitter to go find, like, a Gamora, a Wonder Woman, or a Black Widow figurine, and there were no Gamoras, there were no Black Widows. You could find a Wonder Woman, but you had to buy it in like a 6-figure Justice League set that was $50.
Wow.
Yeah, it's one of those TED Talks that makes you think about, for as big as these things are, it's still not being... females are still not being as represented as they should be. Because let's be honest, you and I know comics, Joel, and
mm-hmm.
the female superhero genre is filling out quite rapidly.
Yeah.
There's yeah, it no really is. Shortage.
And really, like, kid-friendly stuff. Batgirl is mm-hmm. kind of been revamped and is not as, well, she's not as sexualized as other female superhero characters traditionally are. She's more empowered. She kicks butt and takes selfies at the same time. Like, it just, you know, it has a slightly younger appeal for, say, kids that would be looking for action figures. Also, there is a series of comics, and I want to say it's Mike Mahak, I think he draws them. And he does Batgirl and Supergirl. Like, they team up.
Yeah, I know stuff. What you're talking about.
And his style is, again, very appealing. It looks like a Saturday morning cartoon. And those would be fantastic action figures. Like that kind of Bruce Timm simplified style.
Mm.
You know, it wouldn't be crazy difficult to make them. And bright colors, you know, purple and yellow and red and white. Like it would be, they would be fun.
Yeah, even with now that Thor is a female, or even Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan, where the three out, that's the first female Pakistani superhero with her own title, and she's a total nerd. She plays WoW, she writes fan fiction, like, it's such an underserved market. Like, there were literally no Gamora action figures, and how big was Guardians of the Galaxy? Not even any t-shirts?
Yeah. Jay Hammond C in the chat room is saying that his youngest daughter took him right to the boy section and had him buy her a Groot shirt. That's awesome. I'm picturing one of Hammond's little girls running around going, Groot? I am Groot. Super, super cute. It's something that still needs a lot of work. I don't speak on it because just being a guy, I don't really feel like I've got the authority. I mean, I would probably have more to say if I had a little girl. Like if I had a daughter, I would think that I would probably be able to speak to it with a little bit more authority. But for this kind of stuff, I always kind of stay away. But thanks for bringing it up. That's awesome. It's cool that this guy's done a TED Talk. And is he doing anything? Like, is he doing like a Kickstarter for action figures, or does he have any plans to remedy it? Or is he just kind of like pointing it out?
He's mostly just pointing it out. Just, let's be honest, the man doesn't really have the time with two little girls. But
yeah.
Yeah, the genderization of toys is just insane right now. Because I remember when I was a kid, and that's only the 90s, like, Legos were never a genderized toy. But now there are Legos for girls. And they're larger in size, and they're simpler sets. Like, it's just... It's yeah. Over the top now.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's not so much, it's not Lego for girls. You buy Lego for, you buy the girl the Lego she wants. If she wants the Star Wars Lego, then you get the Star Wars Lego. Right? I mean, it's not, yeah. I can't really think of any Lego that would be gender neutral. I guess in terms of the branding, I mean, like, a spaceship is a spaceship, but in terms of like the colors of the boxes and like how it's presented and what section of the toy aisle it's in. Some of the Chima stuff might be kind of go back and forth, especially because there's a TV show that both guys, you know, guys and girls would watch. But I don't know. It's funny. I'll have to ask him the next time he's on the show about like what kind of toys his kids are into as far as, I mean, I know he's mentioning some clothes in the chat room, but I'm wondering what kind of toys they might be into. Phil also is pointing out that Mike Mahak draws Cleopatra in Space, which is a great female sci-fi hero comic. And you're right. I really like Cleopatra in Space. I've been a fan of Mike's for quite a while. And he did another one, another picture book. It's an art book called Fairies Rule and Goblins Drool. And it's a great book. It's beautiful. I've got a lot of the art that he was sharing on social media downloaded to my hard drive, and I use it as just reference and inspiration all the time. I'll throw it up on the Apple TV for like a screensaver. Very, very cool. Very, very cool stuff. Well, that's it. That brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the citadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by Alpha Geek Radio. Apologies for the stream this week, folks. It's a little on the soft side. I'm working on some new software kinks. It is working, though, so that's a win as far as where I was a couple hours ago. But you can go to tunein.alphageekradio.com to find out how you can listen on your favorite device. For the Citadel Cafe, Channel 1 at Showtime. Music for the show was composed by Kevin McLeod, and this episode will, of course, be available on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. Contact the show, write us in to tell us how wrong we were at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com, or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. My name is Joel Duggan, and you can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com. Please check out my Patreon page. That's patreon.com/Joel Duggan. This is where you can go and contribute to this show as well as my comic Starcross. If you're finding that you get value out of this show or the comic, consider becoming a patron for as little as $1 a month. Really helps me put together some new content for you guys. And actually, a big thank you out to the patrons right now, because the audio software that I used to record this podcast, I won't say it expired, but it failed to function the last time I tried to do a show on Comics Coast to Coast. last week, and I had to then go buy the upgrade. Well, that purchase of the upgrade just becomes so much easier for me because I have a number of patrons that are supporting the show. If you are not a subscription kind of person, you can also just tell people about the page, which is always a huge help. You can follow Be My Name on Twitter and Tumblr, just Joel Duggan. Sam, where can people find you online?
I'm at twitter.com/samboney, S-A-M-B-O-N-I-E.
So that's like the Zamboni that cleans the ice, but Samboni?
Yes, because the place I was working at when I signed up for Twitter, that's how they spelt my name.
Nice. That's awesome. You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. And only one of us is from Meat Cove.